Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are about to jump into something truly fascinating today. Imagine the future of libraries, of research, all powered by, well, the most cutting-edge AI. That's exactly what we're unpacking.
Yeah, and the source we're digging into, it isn't some, you know, theoretical paper. It's the actual project description document for a major initiative funded by the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, the DFG. So this is the real vision laid out by the people actually bringing it.
Right. So our mission is clear. We're going to explore this document, understand the ambitious vision behind this project, Library AI, what's it actually aiming to do, who are the teams making it happen, and maybe most importantly, how does this fit into that bigger story, you know, the ongoing evolution of how we find and use knowledge?
It's a perfect example, really. Libraries, they've always been these fundamental knowledge places, and they've always evolved with technology. From, you know, the earliest catalog systems way back when to today's super complex digital world. And this document, it sees AI, especially these large language models, LLMs, not just as... Exactly. Then came the internet era, right? The 80s and 90s. And that's where things really started to open up. Online databases became common, and we got the first online public access catalogs, OPACs. Suddenly, you could actually search what the library had from outside the building. That was huge.
Yeah, I remember that. It felt like a superpower, didn't it?
Yeah.
Finding out if a book was actually there without having to physically go check.
A massive leap in accessibility, for sure. And then following that, early 2000s, libraries brought in what they called discovery layers. See, the problem was libraries now had all these different digital things, the OPAC, databases from different vendors, maybe their own digital archives. Discovery layers were meant to give you one search box, like a single front door, to search across all of them at once.
Right. Trying to make it feel less like rummaging through a dozen different websites and more like one coherent collection.
Precisely. And as electronic stuff just exploded, more journals, more databases in the late 2000s, early 2010s, that led to even smarter systems, these web-scale discovery services. They went beyond just searching everything. They started doing things like relevance ranking, faceted search, you know, filtering by topic or date, and even basic recommendations, kind of like what you see on shopping websites.
Okay, so they started to feel a bit more like the smart search engines we were getting used to everywhere else online.
Yeah, exactly. And the document points out that the very latest trend, just before LLMs really hit the scene, was integrating even more advanced stuff. Machine learning, natural language processing, linked data. Basically, technologies that let you analyze and connect information in much deeper ways.
Which brings us right up to now. And looking at that history, it really clicks why they frame LLMs not as some crazy left turn, but as you said, the logical next phase. The document calls it the next natural evolutionary step. It's using the latest tools to tackle that age-old challenge, making huge amounts of knowledge easy to find and use.
Yeah, it's not just some random tech fad dropped in. It's clearly building on decades of work, digitizing, connecting, making library stuff findable. LLMs are just seen as offering a potentially much more intuitive way to interact with all that.
Okay, so let's talk about these LLMs then. We hear about them constantly, ChatGPT, Bard, you name it. What actually are they fundamentally? And why does this document argue they're such a big deal specifically for libraries?
Right. Well, the source explains they're a big step up from earlier, simpler AI. They're built on these really complex neural networks, especially something called the Transformer architecture, which was a game changer. Basically, think of them as models trained on absolutely massive amounts of text. This lets them understand and generate human language and even have conversations with remarkable fluency.
And we've all seen how they can be useful as general assistants, right? Writing emails, brainstorming ideas, that kind of thing.
Exactly. But this document, it really zooms in on their library potential. It argues LLMs offer vast opportunities, their words, to massively boost how discoverable and accessible collections and services are, and crucially, for everyone. They think these models could potentially lower a lot of the hurdles that make deep research kind of intimidating right now.
Hurdles like?
Well, things like language barriers, if the key text is in German and you speak English, or vice versa. Cognitive barriers if the subject matter is super technical, or even just, you know, technological barriers if the search interfaces are too complicated to use effectively.
Lowering those barriers for researchers. Wow, that sounds huge. What specific things does the document imagine this kind of AI assistant could actually help a researcher do?
Oh, the list is pretty broad. It sees LLMs helping right across the research process. Things like helping with that initial exploration phase, finding relevant papers in a really smart way, maybe even offering feedback on draft manuscripts. They could help analyze data found in texts, maybe even generate charts or visualizations from it. The main idea is really supporting researchers in their literature-centric endeavors, as the document puts it, in ways current tools just can't manage.
So it's not just finding you a list of articles, it's more like actively helping you understand and work with the information in those articles.
That's the vision, moving beyond just finding what is out there to helping you digest it and integrate it into your own work.
Okay, so this brings us squarely to the project itself, this virtual librarian. What's it actually called and what's the main goal?
So the project name is Library AI. The document does mention, interestingly, that they first thought about calling it Library GPT, but they changed it, probably smart, avoids confusion, or maybe even trademark issues with OpenAI.
Yeah, good call. Library AI it is, and its core mission.
It's explicitly an explorative project. They're building and testing out a virtual librarian, specifically designed as an intelligent assistant for, well, research activities. It's really about dipping their toes in, seeing what's actually possible with this tech in a real library setting, serving serious researchers, and figuring out the challenges too.
And they've outlined specific things they want this library AI to be able to do, almost like a job description for an AI.
Exactly, yeah. And these goals came from talking to actual librarians and researchers. So first up is comprehensive information retrieval, which basically means getting answers that are correct and thorough, not just, you know, half answers, finding that obscure bit of info, summarizing long texts, maybe translating bits.
Reliability, thoroughness, yeah, absolutely critical for proper research.
Couldn't agree more. Then second, contextual and in-depth responses. The AI shouldn't just spit out generic stuff. It needs to use its access to the library's specific collection and knowledge base to give really precise, detailed answers that understand the context.
So it knows the specific nuances of the library's own material.
That's the idea. Third goal, knowledge discovery and insights. You know, a really good assistant doesn't just fetch things you ask for. It helps you find stuff you didn't even know you should be looking for. So Library AI aims to analyze the content, find patterns, spot trends, connect ideas, basically help users stay up to date and see emerging connections.
Wow. Okay, that sounds incredibly powerful. Like having an assistant who's read everything and can say, hey, have you noticed this link between these two fields?
Potentially, yes. Fourth is personalization. The system should be able to tailor its responses, maybe suggest relevant resources based on your past interactions or your research area or language preference. But they do specifically say this is optional. User privacy comes first, which is good to see.
Definitely good to hear. What else?
Fifth, multilingualism. It absolutely has to work in multiple languages. English and German are mentioned specifically, but potentially others too. Making collections useful regardless of the original language.
Yeah, breaking down those language silos is huge for global research.
Absolutely fundamental. Sixth is openness and flexibility. This isn't just being built as a one-off for Göttingen. The design goal is to make it system agnostic, modular, so other libraries could potentially pick it up and adapt it for their own systems.
That's really important for having a wider impact, not just a bespoke tool locked in one place.
Exactly. And the final point is interactive experience. The aim isn't just a search box that gives you results. It's a system you can actually have a conversation with, discuss the material, ask follow-up questions, making the whole process of learning and discovery feel more, well, dynamic and engaging.
That does feel fundamentally different from how we interact with library catalogs now. And the document even hints that this could eventually be useful beyond researchers, right? Maybe for students, e-learning, that sort of thing.
Yeah, they definitely see the potential applications broadening out in the long term.
This sounds incredibly ambitious and complex. Who's actually pulling this off? It must need a really diverse team.
Oh, absolutely. This isn't just one institution trying to wear all the hats. It's a collaboration between three key partners, all based right there in Göttingen, Germany. First, you've got the Niedersächsische Staats- und Universitätsbibliothek Göttingen, that's SUB Göttingen, the library itself. Then, the Institute of Computer Science at the Georg August University Göttingen, we can call them UGO Computer Science. And finally, the Gesellschaft für wissenschaftliche Datenverarbeitung, MBS Göttingen GWDG, which is essentially their high-performance computing and data center.
Okay, so you've got the library smarts, the AI experts, and the serious computing muscle. I assume the document explains why bringing those specific three together is so crucial.
It does, yeah. It really highlights that synergy. SUB gutting in the library brings that deep domain knowledge. They understand the collections, the metadata, what researchers actually need, the legal stuff. Plus, they have loads of experience with digital libraries already in projects like Text plus Emeta. They make sure the AI is grounded in the reality of scholarly information.
So they know the what and the who of the library world. Got it.
Exactly. Then Yugo Computer Science, especially their specific research group focused on scientific information analytics, they bring the core AI and natural language processing expertise. They know how to build and train these sophisticated models, how to fine-tune them for specific domains like academic text. They've even worked on large German language models before this.
I've got the how of the AI covered.
Right. And then GWDG provides the essential infrastructure, the technical horsepower. Building and running these LLMs takes serious computing power, particularly specialized hardware like GPUs. GWDG runs those big systems, and they know how to operate them efficiently and reliably at scale. They're also involved in regional AI centers, so they're right at the cutting edge of the infrastructure side.
So they bring the engines and the fuel to run them. It really seems like you couldn't do this without all three pieces, could you?
That's the argument. That combination, deep library knowledge, state-of-the-art AI research, and powerful, reliable infrastructure is seen as absolutely critical for tackling something this ambitious.
Okay, but even with this dream team, LLMs have well-known issues. We mentioned hallucinations earlier, the tendency to confidently state things that are just wrong.
Yeah.
And they need tons of data, tons of computing power. How does the project plan actually plan to build library AI while dealing with these known challenges?
Right. And the technical approach they outline in the document is very deliberate about tackling these problems head on. First, big thing. They're not trying to train a giant LLM from scratch. That would be astronomically expensive and incredibly difficult. Instead, they plan to leverage existing open source LLMs and use a technique called transfer learning.
Okay, so transfer learning. That means taking a model that already understands language generally and then specifically teaching it the library's domain.
Hmm.
Kind of like sending a smart graduate to library school.
That's a pretty good analogy, yeah. It's far more efficient in terms of resources, data, computing time, energy. They estimate it could reduce the effort needed, especially for adapting to different languages, by maybe up to 80% compared to starting from zero. It's about fine-tuning that existing general intelligence to become an expert specifically in the library's context. That includes understanding older language styles or specialized jargon you might find in historical collections.
Okay, that helps with the resource side. But what about the trust issue? The hallucinations, the making things up. How do they make the AI's answers reliable?
This is probably one of the most crucial technical aspects in the whole document. They're using a specific approach called retrieval augmented LLMs, or ROMs. This is designed precisely to stop the AI from just relying on the potentially flawed or outdated information it absorbed during its initial massive training phase.
All right, break that down simply. Retrieval augmented. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means the LLM is trained not just to generate text based on its internal knowledge, but to actively look things up in real time. And specifically, to look things up in the library's own trusted sources before it formulates an answer. It doesn't just find documents like a normal search engine. It actually uses the content of those documents to inform and ground its response.
Ah, okay. So it's like giving the AI a library card and teaching it how to use the catalog, the digital archives, the website, FAQs, all the reliable stuff.
Exactly. The document talks about integrating the LLM with these library services through APIs, application programming interfaces. This creates that unified endpoint we mentioned, one smart interface that can tap into and use current trustworthy data straight from the library's systems. So the AI pulls relevant snippets from the library's collection and uses that information to construct its answer, rather than just recalling something it learned maybe years ago.
And critically, the document says this lets them provide traceable answers.
Yes. That's a huge benefit for research. Because the AI is basing its answer on specific information retrieved from within the library's verified sources, it can, in theory, provide links or citations back to those original sources. This lets you, the user, actually check its work. You can verify the AI's statement against the library's trusted content.
That seems like a really practical way to tackle the hallucination problem head on. Builds trust. Okay, so how do they make sure the AI is actually helpful, that it gives the kind of answers researchers actually need?
They plan to use a combination of things. One is reinforcement learning from human feedback, RLHF. That's a technique where humans rate or correct the AI's responses, teaching it over time what constitutes a good, helpful, accurate answer in this specific library context. And this will be combined with extensive user testing, getting actual researchers and librarians to interact with the system and provide feedback on how well it works, how useful it is, where it messes up. The AI learns from its users.
It's really impressive how they seem to be anticipating the known problems and building solutions right into the design. Now, beyond hallucinations, the document does list other potential risks too. What are they, and what's the plan for dealing with them?
They're refreshingly upfront about the risks, yeah.
Yeah.
They acknowledge things like bias, the AI potentially inheriting biases present in its training data, data deficits, maybe not having enough information on very niche topics, and also just the sheer pace of technological change, the risk that the specific LLM they choose might become outdated quickly, technical challenges in implementation too, of course.
So how do they tackle something like bias, especially when dealing with historical texts, which might contain perspectives we now find offensive or just plain wrong?
Yeah. The bias point is handled quite carefully. They plan for context-dependent audits. And they make a really interesting, nuanced point here. Sometimes, particularly with historical materials, the biases present in the text are actually part of what scholars need to study. So the goal isn't necessarily to sanitize everything or erase historical bias, but to be aware of it, flag it perhaps, and manage it appropriately depending on the research context. It's about academic integrity, not suppression. They also explicitly state they'll adhere to relevant regulations, like the upcoming EU AI Act.
That's a really important distinction, isn't it? Understanding and analyzing historical bias versus accidentally amplifying harmful modern biases.
Exactly. And overall, responsibility and transparency seem to be major themes. They talk about using an ethics by design approach, thinking about the ethical implications right from the very beginning, not as an afterthought. They even mention using tools like AI usage cards, sort of like nutrition labels for AI, to clearly communicate to users how the AI works, what its capabilities and limitations are, and what data it's using.
You know, something else really jumped out at me in the document, a specific section on ecological sustainability. You don't always see that highlighted so prominently in big AI projects.
No, you don't. And it's definitely a key point they wanted to emphasize. They've outlined some pretty concrete measures to minimize the environmental footprint. We already mentioned one using transfer learning instead of training from scratch. That significantly cuts down on the computation needed, which means less energy use.
Less energy is great, but where's that energy coming from? That matters too.
It does, and that's the other critical detail they provide. The project uses the computing facilities at GWDG, and those facilities are powered exclusively by renewable electricity. The document even mentions other efficiency measures at GWDG, like capturing waste heat from the computers to help heat buildings, and operating their data centers very efficiently, aiming for a PUE, power usage effectiveness, below 1.2, which is quite good.
Wow. So the AI is literally being built and run on green energy in highly efficient facilities. That's a serious commitment.
It really is. And they also make the argument that library AI itself could contribute to sustainability in the longer run. By making digital access easier and better, it might reduce the need for people to physically travel to libraries and potentially shift usage away from older, maybe less energy efficient legacy systems.
That's a great point, too. Better digital access has its own environmental benefits.
Hmm.
Okay, looking ahead then, what are the plans for actually testing this thing and sharing what they learn?
The plan includes both technical offline evaluations using standard benchmarks to see how well the AI performs on specific tasks, and also qualitative user studies, getting feedback from real researchers on its usefulness, usability, and overall effectiveness. And they're strongly committed to open science principles.
Meaning
they plan to make the code they develop publicly available where possible, share data sets if licensing allows, and generally disseminate their findings widely. Through academic publications, conference presentations, workshops. The idea is that what they learn contributes back to the broader library and AI research communities.
So the progress, the lessons learned, the successes and failures, hopefully, will benefit others working in this space.
That's definitely the stated intention, yes.
Okay, so let's try and sum this up. This library AI project, it's this ambitious collaboration between the Guttingen Library, SUB, the university's computer science experts, UGO, and their high-performance computing center, GWDG, with DFG funding. They're building towards this intelligent, conversational virtual librarian, using clever AI techniques like retrieval augmentation to keep it grounded in the library's reliable data. all aiming to make the vast world of scholarly information way more accessible and usable initially for researchers, but maybe for students and others down the road, and doing it responsibly, ethically, and even sustainably.
It's definitely a vision that pushes far beyond just a better search box. It's aiming for a fundamentally new kind of interactive relationship with the library's collective knowledge, built on decades of prior evolution.
It really does make you stop and think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just imagine having a truly conversational smart assistant that has instant verifiable access to potentially millions of books, articles, data sets.
Mm-hmm.
All right there. How could that fundamentally change the way you look for information, how you learn new subjects, how you stumble upon those unexpected connections that really spark new research ideas? What would your research, your learning process, actually look like with that kind of assistant truly at your side?
It's a compelling future to contemplate, that's for sure.